Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, occasional television golf spectator.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that is a big fan of artistic diversity, just as long as the art in question involves an attendant measure of quality. Both the films that we watched this past week offer something far different from what has become your standard feature film offering, meaning no music-minded animation, no exploding cars, ravenous zombies, or invading terrestrials. Both are smaller, serio-comic studies of characters facing some sort of emotional crisis. In the case of the theatrical offering Fantasy Life, that crisis belongs not just to a guy falling for the mother of the children he is hired to babysit, but as well to the mother herself. By contrast, the streaming feature Outcome centers on a world-famous movie star played by Keanu Reeves who fears being outed due to something he supposedly did in the distant past. Let's begin by tackling a movie whose whole meaning is captured in its very title. Because when we say Fantasy Life, that pretty much describes what writer-director Matthew Scheer is indulging in with this movie in which he also stars. Scheer plays Sam, a law school dropout, just fired from his job as a paralegal, who is prone to panic attacks that have limited his ability to mature into an actual adult, much less hold a job, and nothing much changes, even when, however improbably, he takes a position as babysitter, or Manny as they like to say, to three young girls fathered by a musician, played by Alessandro Nivola, and his actress wife, played by Amanda Peet. That he would get hired is one thing, but that he would continue to remain in the position stretches the film's credibility far past the breaking point. Add in the supposed attraction between nebbish Sam and attractive mom, and, well, speaking of a fantasy life, let's just say that the best thing that Scheer is able to do is populate his film with a skilled cast that includes Judd Hirsch, Andrea Martin, Bob Balaban, Jessica Harper, and Holland Taylor, though none of them is able to give Fantasy Life even a hint of believability, much less meaning.
Well, thank you for that excellent review. And so now I'm not exactly sure what I'm supposed to say, but why don't we begin by talking about the performances in this particular film? Because, Dan, as you said, this has an amazing cast. And some of these people, you know, have probably we haven't seen them in the relative recent past. And their interactions with one another are truly priceless. And so I certainly enjoyed the parents of and the in-laws. In this particular film. And I was also very excited to see Amanda Peet because I like her and she has been somewhat absent. So I was happy to see her again in Fantasy Life. But I really struggled with what Matthew Scheer was trying to accomplish here. He's the writer, director, and star, and I think that that trifecta is a difficult task to pull off under any circumstances. And I just am not really familiar with him. And as a result, I just couldn't really wrap my mind around his character or the things that he's trying to do. For example, here's someone who has panic attacks, and he's in charge of overseeing, babysitting, caretaking these young kids. And so I was like, no, not a plan. Then, of course, it struck a chord with me because this guy drops out of law school after his second year, apparently, and works as a paralegal. Like, no, go back to law school or get out of the field completely. So struggled with that in Fantasy Life. So that seemed, I don't know.
And we also learned from a woman who was one of his classmates that she thought he was going to be a hotshot.
You're going to be a big tax lawyer,
yeah, exactly.
Mergers and acquisition lawyer. And so I think he had a particular skill set, but his crippling anxiety, you know, maybe prevented him from bringing things to fruition. And I don't know. I just I struggled with this film despite the great performances. But I'm really interested to hear what my co-hosts have to say.
Yeah, I'm with you almost all the way on this. In fact, all the way through Fantasy Life, I was not familiar with this actor. That's the basically the protagonist of the movie. And I was curious. I was like, why has he been directed to act this way? Because it's such a distracting and absurd performance. Like you mentioned, this is a character who at least got into law school, but you get the sense that he could like barely cross the street on his own. Like he's constantly falling down and knocking things over and breaking glass and looking at things with this bug-eyed expression. And you're like, is something wrong with him more than what we know? Like, what's going on here? And you're totally
right. A brain tumor?
Well, God. And it's like, it makes no sense that this wealthy family would ever charge a guy like this with their young kids. And I don't think the movie does a good job of justifying his employment. And so the whole way through, I'm like, why is the director making these choices? And I realized that the actor in question was the director.
The writer and director.
Yes, and everything kind of clicked into place. And
because Bob Balaban is plays Amanda Peet's character,
yeah,
Diane's father.
Yeah.
And he's the only one who keeps raising throughout the whole thing, like, what the heck is going on here? This makes no sense. And it made no sense.
And that character is not seen as a voice of reason. So you're like, okay. And I did look it up, and Scheer has worked with Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig on quite a few films. So maybe that's why he was able to get such a great cast. And I have to say, seeing Jessica Harper in this movie, I was so excited. You know, Phantom of the Paradise and Suspiria. She's one of my favorites. And it was great to see her. But we talk a lot on the show about movies being too long. Like a lot of the time we think, you know, they could have trimmed something out. I actually think this one, hear me out here. I actually think this one is too short. Because it has all of these characters with all of these problems, and we never get a handle on who they actually are. So they just feel like a collection of problems. And I agree that the people in this movie, Fantasy Life, make decisions that seem inexplicable and therefore make the movie itself feel unrealistic, despite the fact that it exists in the real world. I think if Scheer had given us a little more time with the characters for them to explain their actions, I think he could have justified some of the more, outlandish plot beats that
happen
here.
The other thing is he doesn't really know how to segue between, it's like a series of vignettes basically, because it's it starts out
in the fall.
It starts out in the fall,
skips
and then,
to spring,
right, and then we go to summer and then the next fall
back at fall again.
So it's difficult because obviously stuff happened in between and we don't know what happened,
right.
And maybe that would have made more sense if he had filled it in a bit more, as you suggest.
I think so.
And two, he starts off with a strong portrayal of this character, Sam, and you think, well, the movie's going to be about Sam, and it isn't really about Sam. Sam, at one point, becomes a character along with everything else, because then you start dealing with David, the husband. You start dealing with Diane, the wife, and then you bring in all these other characters. And so where is the focus? Who is the focus, and what is the fantasy of this life?
Well,
is it him trying to connect with Diane? What?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think too, I mean, you alluded to it a little bit, that Diane and Sam become close over the course of the movie. And you understand that Diane is feeling underappreciated, not just at work, but at home and in her love life with her husband as well. And she's feeling isolated from all of these things. And so you start to understand why she might feel warm towards this guy, but you never understand how she would ever entertain, no matter how underappreciated and isolated she is, any kind of, you know, relationship with this guy. And again, like I said, when I found out that was the writer director, I went, oh, now I understand why the plot took this turn.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who often wrote himself into movies where he had relationships with women who were way out of his league?
Woody Allen.
And also structured his movies around, you know, the seasons, for instance. So yeah, this feels a lot like a Woody Allen comedy, but it doesn't have any of the
Woody Allen light.
Yeah, right.
And maybe the Baumbach Gerwig connection makes some sense, because, you know, I sort of have a love-hate relationship with each of them. I love some of the stuff that they've done and disliked some other things. And I think I was kind of with it because Sam starts to have a relationship with the girls, and you're thinking, oh, well, maybe he wasn't a bad choice. And then, you know, he has this major panic attack, and I'm like, no.
Which happens off screen.
Right. Get your kids out of there.
There's just some odd choices here. I do want to say, though, that Amanda Peet is getting a lot of acclaim for this movie, Fantasy Life, and she hasn't been in a feature film. I looked this up in a decade.
I know.
Which I was very surprised to see. She's been in a lot of TV, but I think her performance is easily the best thing in the movie, and I almost wish the movie had been more about her, because you're right, it does become something of an ensemble piece as it goes along, and it doesn't really focus on one character over the other, but I want to see her in more movies. It was really good to see her.
For me, I want to see more Bob Balaban.
Well, I always want to see Bob Balaban.
This was the one character
and
I could relate
Hirsch
to.
I mean, there were so many boundary issues in this film. It was unbelievable. He was the therapist who was also the friend of the, you know, it was kind of silly. Yeah.
It'll make you cringe, that's for sure.
So that was our discussion of Fantasy Life. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss the streaming feature Outcome. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Regina Barber. Think about how many hours you're listening to Morning Edition, All Things Considered, in your car while commuting, running errands, or cruising around town. Now, something else to think about? Your vehicle can help bring you the public radio programs you enjoy and depend on. You can make that happen by donating a vehicle you no longer need to this station. Here's how.
To donate, visit spr.careasy.org. From your driveway to the airwaves.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Murray Patruthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I debated the relative virtues of the theatrical release Fantasy Life, such as they are. Let's now turn to another film featuring a character facing a trying emotional crisis. And that film would be Outcome, the Apple TV streamer co-written with Ezra Woods and directed by the actor-turned-filmmaker Jonah Hill. Keanu Reeves stars as Reef Hawk, a two-time Oscar-winning actor who, like Reeves himself, is portrayed in the media as one of Hollywood's nicest guys. Yet unlike the real-life Reeves, Reef is obsessed with keeping secret his former heroin addiction to the point that he habitually consults Google to see what people are saying about him, and his obsession grows worse when he becomes the target of a blackmail threat involving a long-suppressed video. Much of Outcome follows Reef trying to follow the advice of his lawyer, a bizarre caricature of a celebrity enabler played by writer-director Hill himself. Reeves, who shares his character's reputation as being a down-to-earth guy, is perfectly cast, and the performances of Cameron Diaz and Matt Bomer as Reeves' best friends are good as well. But Hill's efforts at satirizing the movie industry works only in spurts, with long sequences falling far flatter than clearly intended.
Well, before I get into my review of this, I would like to issue an apology to you, my co-host, because I respect your time. I respect your intellect. I think of you as friends as well as colleagues. And it was my idea to review this movie. And for that, I am deeply sorry, because I saw this was coming out, this movie Outcome. And I looked at that cast. It's on Apple Plus, by the way. And not only was the cast just stacked, but it had a really unexpected and kind of cool mix of actors. Like, beyond who you already mentioned, you've got David Spade, Laverne Cox, Roy Wood Jr., Susan Lucci. Martin Scorsese is in this movie as an actor. And who doesn't love Keanu, right? And I thought this might be interesting. And I got hoodwinked, because it has been a long time since I have despised a movie that we have reviewed on the show as much as I despise this one. I thought this was an awful, awful, awful movie. And as it was unfolding, it was testing my notions of like what a movie even is, because I don't understand what this movie is trying to say. I don't understand what it's actually about. And it's only like 80 minutes long.
Outcome, I guess that's what it's about.
And that title.
Hence the title.
Yeah. What is that supposed to mean?
Despite being relatively short, it just never seemed to end. But pulling back just a little bit, I think it may be partially autobiographical, because Jonah Hill, who, as you mentioned, wrote and directed and co-stars in this movie, he had some of his dirty laundry aired in recent years. Most notably, one of his ex-girlfriends posted like texts from him showing how controlling he was in the relationship. He's been public about going to therapy. He even made a documentary about his own psychoanalyst, which was called Stutz. But this movie is so muddled that I'm not sure if it's supposed to be an admission of guilt or something on Hill's part, if it's supposed to be
rationalization
or a mea culpa or just an F you to the audience. I'm still not sure, but I do want to say F you to this movie. I really hated this.
Okay, well, thank you. And so I guess we don't need to discuss anything more about it. I was mystified by what he was trying to do here in Outcome. Because first of all, you have Keanu, who's totally playing against type. I mean, we talked about maybe he had some ups and downs early in his career, but everyone seems to almost valorize or deify him as like the world's nicest guy and so forth.
Is that he's playing really against type, though? Because everyone in real life loves Keanu Reeves.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So in real life, that's how he is. And
right.
Now he's trying to figure out what he's done wrong in this movie. And it just didn't quite work for me, his characterization. And then the Jonah Hill character was so obnoxious, you just wanted to slap him upside the head.
And he's supposed to be funny.
Oh,
not funny.
And there were a couple of funny moments, but for the most part, it really fell flat. And it sort of switched back and forth. So the tempo and the tenor of the movie was, you know, just askew. And I was looking forward, honestly, to seeing Cameron Diaz again.
Yeah.
We talked about Amanda Peet in the first half of the show. And so she has a nothing part.
Mm-hmm.
So she does nothing. You know, like you said, is this autobiographical? And whose autobiography is it? Because I don't think it's Keanu's. And Jonah Hill, I mean, we've been focused so much on him as a performer going back to like Superbad and all of these things. And then we've had to go watch his weight loss journey and, you know, all of these things. And it's sort of like, okay, we think you have some issues. If this is how you're trying to work them out, good for you, but I don't have to watch it.
Yeah. I would say, though, that if there are any saving graces to Outcome, they belong to, well, first of all, Martin Scorsese. He's only in two scenes in the film, and he owns both of them.
Yes.
And particularly the second one, in which at the very first, it's like the old Martin that we remember from Taxi Driver, you know. He's just like, what? And then he mellows out, and it's like, ah, there's Grandpa Martin. Yes, okay. But, overall, can we play that off against the scene that Jonah Hill holds in which it's set in a bathroom with him sitting on the toilet? It's like, oh, please.
I know. That was like shades of Lyndon B. Johnson.
I'm sure.
But
sure.
The other problem, I think, here is the fact that, we've already seen this sort of, self-focused Jay Kelly sort of movie George Clooney this year. So is this going to be like the beginning of a series of people like sort of playing out, how tough it is to be an actor
The Seth Rogen miniseries,
The Studio.
It's also another of this inside kind of stuff. And so we have it so tough that we're movie stars.
Well,
and,
but at least something like The Studio and to a lesser degree, Jay Kelly, I think they're aware of that we are watching it thinking, oh, it's just these out of touch celebrities talking about how sad and tough it is to be an out of touch celebrity. And there's like at least a satirical angle here. I don't know what this is supposed to be. Like, what did he want to say with this? Why did he want anyone to see this? Did he think that it would make him seem more relatable? Did he talk to his therapist about this before he put it out into the world? Because the whole time I'm thinking, okay, is the Keanu character meant to be an avatar for Jonah Hill? Because if that's the case, as you mentioned, Reef Hawk, and his name even sounds kind of like Keanu Reeves,
exactly.
He's described as like the nicest and most beloved celebrity. And so if he is an avatar for Jonah Hill, that's pretty revealing of Hill's perception of himself. Mm. And also because the movie includes all of these broad references to quote unquote problematic celebrities, I'm not sure if he's trying to like take down cancel culture, if he's trying to implicate Hollywood in its own bad behavior. But the whole thing, it just drips with condescension. You're just like, this
movie
they
do
just...
have, I have to say, I did really like the setting for much of the film. It's this beautiful house,
but it looks like it's
Malibu.
Right in front of a green screen.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, that's what I was going to say. You know, it had the perfect setting, and then you like look at it more closely, and it looks like some sort of Hallmark card commercial.
You know, the irony, though, is that Reef Hawk is portrayed as the nicest guy, but we find out from one of his former girlfriends, no, you're not a good person. And his obsession with how he's looked at on Google, and we know that he had an addiction problem, and then his efforts at trying to cover that up belie the fact that he's got this reputation.
But this also gets to, I think, what is one of many miscalculations of this movie outcome, because there was a huge potential for conflict or humor in the casting of Keanu Reeves. But it's not funny to cast universally beloved real-world celebrity Keanu Reeves as a universally beloved fake celebrity. Why not actually cast someone against type?
Yeah, somebody who you can really truly play against type.
Or show the Reeves character's actual bad behavior, because even this central tension, this idea that someone is blackmailing him with an incriminating video, it's spoken about in like innuendo. They talk around it to the point that there's no drama in it because we don't really understand like what's at stake. And so it mishandles its central tension.
I mean, we've had ongoing discussions on this show about humor, because humor is idiosyncratic and individualistic. But I'm really struggling to see, I mean, I like painfully funny things such as Curb Your Enthusiasm and so forth. But this just really ultimately wasn't funny. And I wanted it to be funny. And I kept hoping it would be funny. And I kept waiting. And it ended up being sort of crude and sophomoric rather than funny.
And I may be in the minority here, but the single best scene for me was a scene in which, between Cameron Diaz and Keanu Reeves, in which the characters argue about, you know, and he shows his worst side at that moment, and she calls him on it. And I thought that was a dramatic scene. What was this supposed to be doing in a comedy?
Well, and maybe make the movie about that.
Yeah,
it just never figures itself out. So, yeah, again, my sincerest apologies to everyone in the room that I made you watch this.
You owe us, dude. You
really?
Owe us.
All right. You heard it here first.
Yeah. That was our discussion of the Apple Plus streaming feature Outcome. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Marie Pat Truthart, and I discussed the theatrical release, Fantasy Life. Let's take this moment to thank Aaron Bratt for directing the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the Russian-American novelist Olga Grushin. Who is to say that a vividly imagined moment of happiness is not, in the end, more enriching to the spirit than a hazy semi-recollection of some pallid pastime? You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.